I don't know if I said this last week. I think I did. That I finally got to wear jeans for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
Summer's I've been wearing jeans for like 3 days straight, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm excited about it.
Summer is over.
What an old man thing to say. Like, finally getting my good pants on. Yeah, I'm excited about this change in weather. Unfortunately, that's mostly in my area due to an incoming hurricane towards Florida. So hopefully that won't be an issue for everybody down there. But
yeah, that I only heard about that hurricane late last night. Is it already land? Is it on the land, working its way across?
I don't think so. I think it's still in the Gulf, but it sounds like it might potentially be one of the bad ones. So
Let's see. I'm going to open up the weather app right now because I hadn't heard much about it. But yeah, I just drove. Guys, thank you. You guys let me move the episode over because I went to Carolina Shoes annual sales meeting, which they had at a Catskill style cabin resort, which is fairly large, right on a dammed up lake. So there's river or lakefront everywhere around the property. It was really cool. I got in late though, because for me it was a 6 or 7 hour drive. And I was just telling you guys, I thought I was going to hang out, say hi to everybody, turn around and drive right back. But that wasn't the case. So I drove back late last night, got in too late to do the show. But it was a fun time. But I did get to see Paul and John Graz. So John Graz, nobody knows his name is John, by the way. Everyone thinks his whole name is just Graz, like Madonna. He just has one name. So Paul Jackman and Graz and I got to really hang out. We had a lot of laughs. So that was another reason why I didn't mind spending the extra time and hanging out till late, because we just reminisced about hanging out when we did the show that summer. And one thing that we hadn't done ever before, which was really fun, was exchange pictures. Because everybody in this culture, in this day and age, takes hundreds of pictures of any event that takes place. So we were all sharing pictures of that summer when we all worked together. And we were just having lots of laughs. It was good to be there. Apparently, me and Paul are the only two Carolina Shoe influencers. And Graz works there. So he's a little bit of an influencer in his own right. But he actually works there. He's one of the media guys. So that's why he was there. But it was a nice time. We got to see the lineup. Sat in the sales meeting. One by one, they held up new shoes and boots that they were going to introduce. They're all sales samples. So they have a hole punched through the bottom so they don't make it into the regular lineup. There's still the ability to make slight changes, but they all look like brand new finished shoes. Just the samples are nearly perfect. And I've been working a little bit for this lineup called Phantom Rider, which is a offshoot of Double H boots. So the Phantom Rider lineup was especially for me to see because I'm going to be doing some more work with them. I have a video coming up. I'm going to make a saddlebag for them in two videos. Saddlebags like that would be on a horse or a motorcycle with all tool leather and stuff.
So like going to something like that, it's not for you, it's not about negotiating or like you've already got the work. It's just being...
Strictly just socializing. Like, yeah. Okay. Strictly just socializing, hanging out, seeing the lineup to inspire my next few videos, and also Paul looking at stuff. We had a little brainstorm session about upcoming marketing concepts for the videos that we could make. It was fun. It was really cool. It was nice. It was nice to hang around with all the sales. They're all regional salespeople, so everybody you talk to handles this or that. And I got to hang out with the guy that handles New York. But one by one, they all remind you, like, I love when you did this. And I'm like, I got to think, man, like, oh, I made that? Yeah, I did make that. And there's so many videos I forgot that I made. I've been doing work with Carolina for a while now.
Do you have a disconnect with your relationship to the pieces after making 1,000?
A little bit. And one guy came up to me and goes, I love that boat you made. I'm like, oh, yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, but that was for Filson. I made a boat for Filson. I'm like, I go, oh yeah, the canoe. He goes, no, you made like a rowboat. And I'm like, oh yeah, I made a rowboat. Oh yeah, and that was for Carolina. I had to remind myself.
That's funny.
No. So that's my deal. And then I'm going to be working on it in the next episode of the house video. It's going to be my next, it'll be episode, I think, 7. I'm going to work on the next few phases of what's going on there and discuss. I have a couple of new sponsors for the series. So I'm going to talk about 3 new sponsors that I have on the series. They're all home building stuff. It's going to be exciting. Yeah. And that's where I'm at. And
how's the siding coming on the barn?
Oh, I forgot all about that whole week. Yeah, they were here all week. I had David, the Mexican carpenter, which is his branding. No letters. That's his branding. David, the Mexican carpenter. That's his own branding. Like, that's says his logo.
I like how you have to qualify that. So it didn't sound like you're just being a racist.
Yeah, I know, because somebody's like, racist much? In my comments, I'm like, that's his branding. That's what he calls himself. And so David, he goes, why can't he just be David the Carpenter? I'm like, he is, but this is what he wants to call himself. I had a conversation in one of my conversations in the chat. David came with his crew, and for LP Siding, David and Kyle from RR Builders represents LP Siding. They both are field representatives for LP. And LP provided the siding. David came, and I paid him and his team to install. And then Kyle came on the working for LP, and they shot about 15 different reels and snippets and information drops and all reels. It seems that whole business isn't really YouTube videos anymore. It's all reels. Well, I guess that's reels and shorts and TikToks. It's all about one-minute pieces. It was interesting to see a big, giant national brand like the LP Siding, which is probably a subsidiary of some other giant company, really focused on just making reels. There's just a couple of marketing people there. It wasn't complicated. They had a couple of cameras. They had the Osmo Pocket and a Sony point-and-shoot, and they shot a bunch of different reels. And they had a little script for mostly all of them, just at least an idea. And also lots of tidbits of important information that they wanted to get out there. So David was here for a week. Kyle only came for one day. But that one day was the day that I had to leave. So I hung out with him as long as I possibly could. I left here at 3 o'clock. And we had a really, really nice day. And the building looks phenomenal. I'll send you guys some pictures. Next is the landscaping. We're going to do all the outlets. I'm working with a company, a new company, electrical company. They're going to provide all the outlets and switch covers and stuff. So that'll be in the barn update, which will probably be November. I'll do a video for the barn update, which will include the siding. In the meantime, I'm doing some shorts and reels and stuff. But yeah, I'm very grateful to David and Kyle for coming out here. And I'm glad because they did the other barn. Kyle built the barn to some end, and then David took it over and finished it. So the original TV show barn. So now I have these two beautiful barns right beside each other, and I couldn't be more grateful. It's up to me to maintain them and give them the respect they deserve for the community, for those guys.
I always think about creating shorts and reels, and every once in a while I'll try to take a previous video or a video that I just done and turn it into a short and reel. And to me it feels like, nope, you just shortened a video. You need to write a short or a reel. You need to write a short form video. And my mind doesn't think like that. When you approach the short form video, is it just for that, or are you pulling from something bigger?
A lot of times if I get some good snippets while I'm shooting, for instance, I did some time lapse with these guys. So I did one already, but I have several other time lapses I could put up. It seems like the most natural thing to show the time lapse, but I do have little snippets of conversations which I might be able to interject in there. So it's kind of, it's like Iron Chef. You just look at what you got, see what you can make. But mm-hmm. I am making a reel for the cabinet that I finished with the 48 drawers. I'm going to make a reel to highlight Type Bond because I have a new relationship with Type Bond. We renewed our old relationship, so we're back in the action. So I told them I'd make a reel. So that reel is going to have all the little bits and pieces of me gluing and using the branded glue. But it will have a narrative, a beginning, middle, and end.
This barn looks incredible.
Yeah, it really does.
The lighting on it is just amazing too. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. Wow.
Thank you. Yeah, it really came together. I mean, I kind of had the vision, but I hired all good guys to do it. Between Patrick and David and Kyle, who came in. Steel Lighting. They aren't sponsoring this, but they gave me the lights, and LP Siding gave me the siding. It's a really nice combination. I paid for the windows, and I built the doors. And I was going to paint the doors black, but everybody was yelling at me, do not paint those doors.
I think they were right. Doors.
Yeah, David and Kyle and the LP people are like, don't paint the doors. It looks so nice, the contrast.
Yeah, everything about it is so cool. The lighting, the dark siding and the light doors. And then is there like a French door up above on the second floor?
There's two French doors. There's two double doors at the top and on either side. And it's really beautiful up there. I open the doors. I got leather straps to hold them open. And then the wind just blows through there. It's really nice.
Stunning.
That's really just so you can lift heavy things up into the second floor. Right?
Yeah.
That's really. But that, and also I like to just to have be able to have the quick air exchange. Same on the downstairs. Now, going forward, I did these two buildings. I designed these two buildings with help from everybody in the community. But the idea to have the wind blow through them is always really important to me. Mm. On a nice windy day, I open the big doors in the TV show barn, and I just blow all the sawdust that just sucks right out. So it becomes like the whole room is like a vacuum. So I just kick up all the dust that's on the machines, everything with a leaf blower, and it all works its way right through the building, which is great. I'm in a little bit of a jet stream here in the fall and in the spring. There's always lots of wind. So I'll be like, oh, it's a windy day. It's a perfect day to blow out the shop. Open the doors and just kick it all out. Hmm. Then it just goes into the yard and goes back to nature. It's mostly wood dust. And I picked the siding that has the texture in it. You could see it up close. It looks like the building's wet, but it's just because it's still a little shiny. This is pre-finished, so once you put it up and caulk it, it's done.
Oh, wow.
The paint has a 20-year or 15-year guarantee, and you could paint right on top of it again. It's not like aluminum siding where it would be blasphemy to paint on it.
Yeah.
And the wood itself, the actual siding has a 50-year guarantee.
How many... Wow. Buildings are on your property.
No, I sound just like LP siding rep. There is the house itself that I'm sitting in, and there's a what I call the machine shop and the blacksmith shop. They're back to back on the same foundation. Okay. And these two buildings now. Okay. I can't wait till I get reassessed. I'm going to have to sell everything and move into a shoebox.
Yeah, there's a big stink in Toledo. Everybody's property values went up. And they're encouraging everybody to fight it and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. That's going to happen here as well with all the growth that our area has had. I mean, I guess it's probably happening everywhere to an extent. But
yeah, you've got new industry coming in, right? Or that moved in?
Yeah.
These are two ag buildings, supposedly. So agricultural buildings. So they don't get the same hit as a regular residential building.
Hmm.
But they just look really pretty. The second floor is going to be my clean shop. I keep calling it my leather shop, but predominantly the main reason I'm making that shop is so I have a clean shop. I could sew in, cut fabric, paper, whatever, but there's not going to be any grinding powder from metal. There's no grinding powder from wood or sawdust. No machines up there that produce sawdust. So that's going to be a nice... I can show off the bags. Right now, all the leather bags that I've ever made are in the house, in my living room, because it's far away from the cats, far away from everything, because no one gets at him, no sawdust. Once the room is finished and all the Patrick's doing the trim right now, once all the trim is done upstairs, I'm going to start setting it up with like a showroom. And it'll also be, we have Maker Camp coming, so I'm going to put somebody up there. I'm going to set a bed up there so we could spend. It will ultimately have a bathroom, but I'm working on the engineering team. I'm going to write that down so I can call them. There's local engineers that work with the town people to be able to do that sort of plumbing. So
you put in the basic plumbing in the pad, I assume?
Yeah, well, Taylor designed the pad and the frame and everything, so she did all that, which is funny because when we start digging into it, I need to have her send me pictures and stuff of what she did because I wasn't involved. She did it all. There's radiant floor in there and everything. Wow. There's one room where there's about 16,000 pipes sticking out of the ground.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, David, what have you been doing?
So working on two videos. I just finished up the bed video, shot the final shots last night, and that should be out any day. That is in the rental house. And many months ago, I made French cleat wall hanging nightstands, but they've never been hung up. They were hung up on a wall to get some final shots when I made that video, but now they're actually hung up and I got the bed in there and it looks like it's all one unit and it looks, I'm really happy with it. And so that video should be out any day now. And then at the rental house 11 months ago, I made bar stools, and I made them terribly. They broke. So,
oh no.
Did they break with a guest?
Nope. No, there's that house is so far from guest. The plan was to have it ready by November of this year. It might be ready by November next year. There's so much to do. But I was over there one day and I was looking at my phone and I went to grab the bar stool and I pulled it back and it tripped over my foot, fell backwards, and the chair broke. And I thought, oh, stop looking at your phone, moron. And then months later, I repaired it. And then months later, I did the same thing on the other chair. And I'm like, okay, if it happens twice, it's a bad design. So it was a little top heavy. And then the back had this like butt crack, hider, and it's at an angle. And so when the chair falls, that angle hits first and then snaps the chair. So it's a bad design. And so in this video, I take the chairs. I'm like, we add a little bit more weight to the bottom and then redo the tops, which is all power carve. So now it's the shape of your butt. And it was
my power butt? Carve.
Yeah, your butt. Yeah. Wow. I had, you sent me the 3D scan.
Yeah. I didn't know what you were going to use that for, but I'm glad it was helpful.
Yeah. Man, power carving is so fun and it's so satisfying. I got the, it's an Arbortech product. It's not the turbo plane. I think it's called a turbo scraper. So it uses like this little carbide scraper instead. And it just takes a little, it's less aggressive than the turbo plane. And it's just feathers of wood just fly off and you have a lot of control with it. I know I sound like an ad for Arbortech, but I paid for this thing and it was just so fun. I need to do more power carving.
I've never seen this thing.
I think it's fairly new. They put out a promo video months ago and I like instantly bought it. I'm like, oh
yeah, it came out in January.
January? Yeah. So a year ago, 10 months ago. Have you used one, Jimmy?
Yeah, they sent me one. I've been playing with it. It's fun.
Yeah.
I forget what I did. I did something where I used a lot of the carver. I got to look through my videos. I did something recently where I was playing with it. Oh, I did the stool for Phantom Rider. I did that carved sort of Maloof-inspired stool where the whole thing was carved with those tools.
Yeah, if you use the turbo plane, it can be very aggressive and you can do like big chunks, but this scraper is just it's like taking a card scraper but really really fast to it.
Much more controllable. Huh.
Much more control, yeah.
Interesting. I haven't done any kind of work that like looking at their website right now for that page, just the type of sculpting and the type of wood-based, I don't know the word I'm looking for. It's woodworking that's not flat.
Right.
I guess. Yeah. I have not done anything like that in a really long time. And it hadn't dawned on me that I haven't done anything like that until I saw these pictures. And I'm like, huh. Like, I kind of miss... I've never done a whole lot of that type of stuff anyway, but I kind of miss that type of... I don't know. I guess it's sculpting.
It's like a subtractive method of making something. Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm.
Interesting. It would be very therapeutic for you, Bob, to do something like that. Because you're so additive to take stuff away. You should experiment.
Yeah, I think it's funny because the stuff like this, looking at like there's like a wonky spoon on there that somebody carved, this like curved spoon, and there's a candy dish that's, you know, that type of thing is not that the output of something like this is not the thing that I naturally want to create.
Yeah.
I don't think about I should make something that's but this is back to the whole art conversation we've had a million times. Like I'm far more of a functional maker than like I want to make something that looks like this or has this feel or has.
It could be an interesting approach. You know, you talked about doing some things for the first time, or you know, at your age, doing certain things that nobody would have assumed that you could do. It could be funny. Maybe not even a full video. Maybe just a reel or two of you playing around with this type of machine.
Yeah.
Because it's not 3D modeling, which is really mm-hmm. common. The antithesis of that would be me going and trying to do 3D modeling, and you see me fumbling through. Which, by the way, I tried to download Fusion the other day. My computer won't handle it. I guess Fusion changed quite a bit. Everything's upgraded and changed.
No, your computer will handle it.
It tells me my computer doesn't have the right...
You have like 18 computers. Just pick a different one.
No, well, they're both... My two main computers that I use most often are like 6 years old now. Six or seven years old. Like maybe 5 years old. But it would be interesting to see you take an approach to make a spoon. Did you ever make a spoon? One of my biggest, highest rated videos was a spoon video that I did on the Make channel. It's got tens of millions of views. Not on my channel, on the Make channel. I put it on my channel, it got 100,000 views.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, I saw this already.
I think when I did the spoon and tried that kind of thing, I think I probably even did it with the turboplane. I don't remember. Yeah. Most of the response was like, this is not your thing. You know, that sentiment of, I mean, like, I don't mean people are mean about it, but just like, oh, this is not really why we watch you for this type of thing, which is fair enough, you know. But I don't know, maybe I'll come up with something. I really like the idea of, you know, both of you all have done this, of making a piece of furniture out of more dimensional things and then sculpting that down to something
That's how I did
less,
that school.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's not. It isn't how I think. I think in flat lines and 90-degree, 45-degree angles. I don't think too much in curved or textured pieces. And I want to do more of that. But when I go to sketch something up, it's not what comes out of me. And it's just because I don't do it enough.
Yeah. I think the one time that I've used... That when you said that made me think of this. I made that guitar, the semi-hollow body guitar, and the top of it has, it's like a, it's not an arch top, but it's not a flat top. It's a sculpted top. And so I routed, I had stacked router templates to route like levels to it to get the general shape. And then I went back, I think, with the turboplane and smoothed out in between those. But I still ended up trying to get a really smooth, curved top rather than like a sculpted top.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that was the quickest way to get down to that. But I think that might be an interesting thing to, like you're saying, you think of something, build something in flat faces, straight lines, and then and build it that way on purpose, and then go back and try to find something else inside of that.
Right.
That's not those shapes. That would be an interesting...
I'm reading
the problem I have, I would have, I know I would have, because I already do this, is trying to solve that before I build it. I would try to see the shape that I'm going to get to before I, you know, start with the squared off one or whatever. But anyway.
I'm reading this David Lynch book. It's called Catching the Big Fish. And he talks about creating something but not having the finished idea in your mind, but just getting to a point and then reacting to that, and then getting to another point and then reacting to that. So and in his example, he talks about creating something and then breaking it and then reacting to that break. So I thought that was a very interesting way, because you don't know what the final outcome is going to be, and it's a back and forth process with you and the piece that you're making.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it would be interesting there to like to take that break, whatever that whether it's a physical break or something, and give that break to somebody else to do. Mm. Because I would break things in a way that I can deal with. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it would be interesting to let somebody else come in and cause chaos within your design and then react to that chaos.
We almost did that 8 years ago. Do you remember the boxes that we made?
Oh, yeah.
You were the only one that got to the end of point A and sent it off. You sent me a box that you made, and then I never finished it.
I forgot.
Do you remember this, guys?
Yeah. We were supposed to do like a round robin. We never did it.
Yeah, it never happened. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well.
One of the
that's interesting, though. That's kind of a neat approach. I'm writing that down.
It's funny because one of the things that I talked about last week or 2 weeks ago was knowing what the end point is. So I know when to stop. And then this other guy comes along and says, don't know what you're at. Like, everybody has a different approach to their creativity. So I'm just trying to take it all in and see what I can do with it. One of the techniques that I used for the power carving, the seat, was drilling a bunch of holes at a stopped depth. So I would know when to stop
that's a
carving.
That's a classic way that they do canoes. If you ever see a dugout canoe, they build the shape, the exterior shape, so they know exactly what the outside looks like. And then you hammer a bunch of copper nails, and then you carve from the inside. And when you hit the tip of the copper nails, you know you're at the thickness.
Interesting. That's cool.
Huh.
Yeah, but drilling is definitely a way you see a lot of the stone guys do it.
Interesting. That's, Yeah. I feel like that could be used in a lot of different things.
Yeah, copper nails keep they don't damage the tools when you get near them. Sure. And they also don't rust.
Because you brought up, Bob, the different layers for the router templates that you did. Mm-hmm. And you could, at your deepest point, you have a hole that's a half inch deep. And then your lightest point, you have a hole that's a quarter inch deep. And you just combine the two.
Yeah. Interesting.
That's an interesting approach. It's like layers on a CNC. Mm-hmm, depths mm-hmm. of cut. It's a really smart way of doing it.
When I did that guitar, it was interesting because I cut those templates on the laser, and so they were, quarter inch MDF router templates with different profiles that would stack up on top of each other, but they had to be centered over the same point. And so when I cut them, I cut a key shape that was like a kind of a cross shape out of the middle of all of the templates. And then when I had my guitar blank, I glued that key onto the top of the block. And so every one of these templates dropped on to kind of a keyed location, but they had a different outside so I could cut down to them. It's similar to if you did that on the CNC, you would just have, you'd be locking all those, the material in one place and cutting all those different layers on top of it. But I had a point to explaining that. Now I don't remember what it was, so it's okay.
You just made me think of, part of me wanted to do the seat on the CNC, but I'm not good, or I've never attempted that curvy butt shape style drawing in Fusion 360, but I could have done the various depths on the CNC and then use the power carving to just kind of blend everything together. Mm. I might do that. That might be a good technique in the future.
Yeah. Or combining. Just make like a pixelated butt shape. So it's just like a blocky
little Minecraft butt.
Yeah. Minecraft butt. Anyway, let's see. So what have I been doing? I have been not filming. This last week I have been almost entirely, well, after last week I finished up working on the Ghia. So I was out there for a couple more days doing, more body work. I got all of the new panels welded in on the front of the car, which is cool. On the outside, there are in some interior structural panels that I have not done yet, but you couldn't see them in the video anyway, so I didn't think it was worth trying to force that. But I did get a lot done. It was really interesting because I don't remember where I was at when we talked last week, but it was really frustrating to me to try to put a time constraint on myself and get that amount of metal work put in, like cutting this. It was basically the entire front of the car, and I had to do it in sections. So I cut a big section, put it in, and I didn't cut it well enough, and so there were gaps. And I ended up, basically, I had the car body and the patch panel. There was a gap across that, so I ended up cutting out space around that whole seam between those two things and putting in new panels. So I created a bunch more work for myself just because I didn't have the panels fitting well enough to begin with. And so it was really frustrating because I had to do way more welding and way more cutting and way more shaping and way more grinding than I would have had to do if I had spent that time up front to really get those panels to fit well together. So I basically, the last 2 days, was like, I'm turning off the cameras, I'm going to buckle down and just focus on a piece at a time and get it done. And it was really cool that I actually got it done. The thing that was really frustrating or irritating to me about it was that I had to turn the cameras off to be able to be that productive.
Yeah.
And with what we do, like that's a weird conundrum to find yourself in.
When I find myself in that moment where the cameras are really competing with what I'm trying to do, I'll just set up a time lapse. This way I got something. Is it going to be some changes taking place? You'll see it ultimately. And then this way it's not boring to the viewer, you hope. And it's also not boring to you because you're not running back and forth. You can focus on the work and you know something's getting grabbed. You have something to look at.
I kind of addressed it in the video. I like turned to the camera and explained, like, this is where I'm at. This is all the stuff I just said. Now I'm just gonna turn off the cameras and get it done. And so the rest of the video is pretty short because there's this huge like 2 days worth of work that just I have a little time lapses running, but basically, you know, you're skipping over a huge amount of work. But all that to say, I got to the end of the week and could step back and be like, yes, there's new metal there. Still have grinding to do. There's probably still a little bit of like finesse.
That's my
type
least
stuff.
Favorite genre of music. New metal.
New metal.
Barf. Slip.
Yeah. So I made some progress there, but because of that, being like underneath the car with a weird angle, you know, my neck's all twisted and stuff all last week. I this week have basically just been designing and cleaning here, even though I need to start shooting. I have been kind of taking advantage of the, you know, just the opportunity to work on some design stuff that I need to do and go start going through all the stuff that's been in my office. And I know it doesn't look like it, but it actually is a lot better. There's
I was gonna
way
ask
less stuff
if you've made any progress.
I have made progress. And it's one of those situations where the office won't look good until it's completely done.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There's still going to be stuff on the floor, but it is way better than it was. Which
any
is
more
cool.
Recordings?
No, not yet. But part of this is, like I mentioned, is trying to create a space to be able to do that. So we're getting there, which is really cool. Another thing one of the design things I've been working on is, so we talked about the my spray can storage thing around
the
pole.
Oh yeah, that looked really cool. You did that all week.
And that has gotten a really good response from people, and I had a lot of people say, this is your product. This is the thing you've been talking about. Like, you know, you should turn this into something that people can buy or make or whatever. And I got enough of that I was like, really? It seems like a very weird use case. Not the spray can thing, but the storage around a pole, which is called a lolly column, apparently. And so I did a little Instagram thing last week asking people, just curious, do you have these poles in your house?
I do.
Apparently a lot of people do. And even like the end of the poll, I think it was 30% yes. But still, that 30% is way more than I was expecting. I don't know. I just didn't expect it to be a common enough thing. But I guess it's, you know, in most basements and a lot of barns and stuff like that. And the percentage doesn't matter as much as looking at the actual numbers of people that responded. I'm like, wow, there are several hundred people who were excited enough about the idea and paying attention well enough to say, yes, I have these things. So because of that, I spent like earlier this week a day just how can I turn this into take the idea and turn it into something that is manufacturable and flexible enough to do more than my initial idea of what it can do. And like, you know, so I've been thinking a lot about that. And what we were talking about earlier about thinking really far down the road before you actually get started, that is, I think, one of my superpowers, also kind of a curse, because it, you know, you can think really far down thing and then you get to like the, oh, it's like 90%. There's a problem. So I'm just going to erase all of the work that I thought through to that point. So I've spent a lot of time like going down a rabbit trail really, really far and be like, well, what if blah, 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 you know. The good thing about that is I've avoided a whole lot of unnecessary design work and an unnecessary 3D printing and unnecessary, you know, because I can see where the design would fall apart I can't always do that. I'm not trying to claim to be like amazing at that, but it is one of the things that I spend my time on, is trying to think really far down a path.
Sure.
And so I've got a couple of versions right now that I've been working on that I think might be flexible enough to be useful in several situations, which is really cool. And I don't know how close those are to being, you know, actually testable, but it's pretty cool to have a day, to take a day intentionally to try to do a thing that's not a video. It's not a, it's like a functional, if this were going in someone else's house, how would it work?
Right.
What would they have to do?
I could could really see that object being at a hardware trade show, somebody dedicating a whole booth to it, if not licensing it to somebody. It's totally a proper invention.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was. And then I got a message like yesterday, this morning, something from Infinite Craftsman. And he was working on something similar last year, I guess, and then ended up adapting it to go around the column of his drill press. And somehow I had never seen it, I don't think, but it's a similar idea that goes around that same column, but he uses it to hold drill bits and stuff like that.
Yes, I remember he made that, yeah.
It's a different system. It's all 3D printed and stuff, which mine would not be. But it was interesting just to see a different approach to, you know, a similar thing.
But is that pole standard? And is there a PVC pipe that is that size? So if somebody wanted to make a pole?
Yes. Actually, there were several people that said, I don't have those, but I would put up a pipe just to be able to store stuff around it.
You could buy those.
What?
You could buy them at Home Depot. You could buy those lolly columns. It's better if it would be steel, because it doesn't flex if it's going to be about 5 or 7 feet long.
Yeah.
But you could buy them. They come with, they're steel filled with concrete. And you cut them with a grinder, and then you hit them with a hammer, and the concrete breaks right at the line.
Huh. There is a standard. There are multiple standards, and that's one of the problems. And one of the things I've been trying to design around, actually, to make a flexible design. But I think typically they're 3, 3.5, or 4 inches, and I would assume there are probably bigger ones for certain situations. But, you know, I think that's a pretty good gap to try to aim for, a 1-inch variance. And because it's wrapping around a cylinder, I started down a couple of paths that would be flexible, but then would end up causing problems. But I think I have an idea now that will actually allow it to fit on any of those sizes, which is pretty cool. So,
nice.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's kind of what I've been doing, spending a lot of time doing that, working on some design for version 2 of my camera stand. I think I'm actually going to do a second video about the camera stand.
What?
Yeah, which is something I don't think I've ever done.
Yeah.
But it's, that thing is awesome, and it's 90% awesome. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I gotta make it 100% awesome. I gotta go a little bit further with it, you know? And so I'm working on some upgrades for that, and which is cool because I can actually keep the one that I have and take one of them to the farm and then have one here, which is pretty cool. Because when I was working on the Ghia, it would have been really handy to have that out there to be able to take the camera and move it all the way up and down and get those angles, because I was dealing with tripods again, and it was a huge pain. So
my sliding crosscut table that I made, I want to do a second version of that, because in the comments, people had amazing ideas, and I'm like, oh, that would have simplified the thing. Also, every spring and fall, I have to adjust mine. My floor in my garage moves quite a bit.
Really?
And it moves above the table saw one part of the season, moves below the table saw another part of the season. And getting that height perfect is really difficult on the one I have now. So I would love to do another video of like version 2, even better, maybe even cheaper. That first video did so well that I think it would be worth doing another video on it.
Hmm. So that's really interesting. Your floor moves that way because the two pieces don't move the same amount, like the table saw and the.
Yeah. So my garage, it's not that old. Apparently it was only 10 years old when we moved in, but I think it was built very badly. It's like a pitcher's mound in the middle. Right on the table saw it's like a pitcher's mound, and the worst grade is just to the left of it where the sliding crosscut is, and it drops down probably 2 inches within like 5 feet. It's really bad.
That's a lot.
I'm used to it now, but when somebody walks in there, it's kind of disorienting because the ground is so bad. My biggest regret when I moved in and did the renovations was not leveling the floor. I wish I would have done that. I suppose I still could, but the sliding door, the garage door is, the tracks have been clipped. The garage door is bolted down. So there's only the standard door that you can get through. And so it would be so much work to move everything out of there, level the floor, move everything back. I don't know if it can only be done half at a time. And then the other issue is the ceiling to floor at most points is 8 foot 1 inches. Moving a sheet of plywood in and out of the shop is so difficult, and I'm always scraping the ceiling with it.
Interesting. Okay, hear me out.
Yeah.
You could, instead of leveling the lower parts up, you get the power carver, and you just go into that mound in the middle, and you just start shaving it down until you get a flat floor.
What is it? Is it wood? Is that why it's going up and down? It can't be the earth.
It's cement.
It's swelling with the cold?
Like, yes. And it's enough to throw the whole thing out of alignment. It's so bad. Like, I'm not sure what they were thinking.
Is it frost? Heave?
I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe the whole building's moving. I'm not sure. It's a garage. So if you park the car there in the wintertime, all that snow and water would drip off and not drain out of the garage. It would drain towards the back of the garage. It's so bad. I'm not sure what they were thinking.
Weird. Well, I don't know. Not sure what to tell you on that one. Yeah. Guess you'll have to tear it down and build another one.
I need more sponsorships.
Speaking of sponsorships,
yeah.
What a segue. So you took on 2 videos.
Yeah.
This last week.
Yeah.
Give us the deal.
So Jimmy couldn't record on Wednesday and said, hey, can we record on Thursday instead? I'm like, I'm not sure if I can. I am in video. I just a lot. I had to do 2 videos this week because I took on a last minute sponsorship that they needed before the end of the month. And I wasn't prepared for this, but I could use the money. So I said yes, knowing it was going to be a very stressful week.
Sell out.
Yeah, I know, sell out. And so that's the topic today, is doing something for the money. And then, as I was explaining before the show, I'm listening to this Neil Gaiman book. It's a collection of his speeches that he gives at universities and stuff. And I'm working on a piece. I got headphones in. I'm listening to the audio book. And he's like, as an artist, don't take on projects just for the money. And I'm working on a project just for the money. And I'm like, oh man, am I doing this wrong? And I'm not, because I don't. It's like being an animal in the wild. You don't know when your next meal is coming. So 100%. You eat now. And
yeah.
And I mean, this is what I do for a living. So when these things come up, if the money is right, you have to say yes. Well, you don't have to say yes, but I definitely want to say yes.
Yeah. You don't have to say yes, but you also have to accept the aftermath of that. Like, how badly do you want to know where your rent's coming from, or
exactly.
your mortgage payment, or how badly are you, do you want to feel secure for the next whatever?
Right.
I don't think as much as we used to, but of course we still get some sort of response from people around having sponsorships in the first place on videos, I think it's way different than it used to be, but there's still a little bit of that. We still get people who pick on us for using certain sponsorships, I think here and there, when it's something that they don't agree with or don't think is worthwhile or whatever. But the fact of the matter is, like, it's part of us being able to do the other stuff that we want. Just like, I think, someone selling insurance as their day job so that they can have the life that they want, so that they can have weekends and evenings to
paint miniatures
or play golf or whatever. Yeah, that's right. It's out in the open.
Yeah. How many people do we know and meet that people we talk to online for the last few years, then you meet them in person, you find out they're a doctor. They never once ever talk about it, or a lawyer or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's their real profession? Just like for the example you just described, Bob.
And, you know, we could have the conversation around people's distaste for ads or stuff, or the whole sellout idea. But I think it's way more interesting to actually talk about our own, the internal part of it. So, David, you are an artist. I still don't see myself that way. So I think we have, like, that's the different perspective there on personal investment in the thing that we're creating or something. I don't know how we would say it. But have you ever actually felt like you are changing or you're, I don't know what the word is, because of money coming in towards a video, has that actually made an effect on what you were going to create in the first place? Has it really made a change to the core thing that you, not details, I'm not talking about like color scheme or, you know,
right.
Has it really changed what you were going to do in the first place?
I don't think so. The sponsorship part of it doesn't really dictate what I'm going to make or how I'm going to make it. I just need to talk about their product, you know, for 60 seconds. Most of the time, nearly every sponsorship that I do has nothing to do with the project, and I get to do and they don't care what I'm going to make. You know, of course there have been times in the past where it's a tool company or woodworking company and they want a certain thing, and sometimes that is still good because now you're designing around somebody else's parameters, and that's a challenge in itself. In addition to, a lot of times I would not even make the thing if it wasn't for the sponsorship. I need the pressure coming in.
That's
so
a huge,
I can
that's
do
a really
the thing.
Big point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when people say, "Hey, you sell out," you'd be like, "You thank that sellout because I was never going to make this thing.
I was never going to make this thing." Yeah.
Yeah.
If I didn't
really
have
a point.
If I didn't get sponsorships, I wouldn't be able to do this for a living. I wouldn't be able to make all the things that I make and get better as a craftsperson and release these videos out into the wild for people to enjoy or not enjoy. I mean, I get a lot of hate watchers. I like that.
We all do.
Yeah. So, man, without the sponsorships, there wouldn't be the art.
There was a time before YouTube when do it for the money. Everything I did for the money. I just dilly-dallied and tinkered coming up with toy ideas in the after hours. But for the money, there was a moment in time after I did the show Hammered in 2007 is when we finished. I was in between, like, do I go back to the toy business? Do I keep trying to sell TV show concepts? And in the meantime, everything I did for the money. I remember there was a local bar right on Avenue B and 4th Street, if anybody's in New York, or Mama's Bar. I became friends with Mama, this big guy that owned the bar. I don't even know his real name. I think his name is Michael, but everyone called him Mama. So I would work for Mama, and I would do anything he needed. And I remember there was a section of the floor, right, where the waitresses would go up and order, that the floor was soft. So he's like, "Can you strengthen this floor up? I don't know, because it feels like sponge." And that was, every time I think of somebody saying do it for the money, I think of this. So it's like, sure. So I put all my tools on a wheelie cart and I wheeled myself about five blocks up to where his shop was on a open, you know, off hours in the daytime. And I took out my circular saw and I cut out a 5x5 section of the floor, and I peeled it up, and there was another floor with tiles on it. And I cut through that, and then there was another section of tiles on it. I ended up being about 6 inches deep. This place had, because when you walked in, you stepped up. He stepped up because the previous four or five owners, wow, this place was like 100 years old. They just cut a floor on top of a floor on top of a floor. And that top floor was all sponge. And then people were stepping on the spongy version of the next floor beneath it. And I cut it all out and they rebuilt the whole floor. And I was like, man, this is, and it was all soaked with stale beer. It was gross. Every piece of wood was soaked and wet from mopping the floor. And all the tiles were like soft and cracked. Those square 12 by 12 tiles you see in like a typical crappy old shop floor. So that's for the money. I did that for the money. That would, that might have made, that might have made an interesting YouTube video now.
Right. Yeah.
But no, that was for the money. And everything I did, I would just wheel my cart within a few block radius in the city. I do it for the money. That's all I kept saying. I'm doing this for the money. This is for a greater good. This is all going to go to a greater good.
It's, but, you know, I think some of the thing comes in where there's this disassociation between survival and just like making a living and the art, where most people, they do that kind of work. They do work that pays their bills. They do work that is work because they need work for money and money for food and food, you know. And then separately, they may have a passion for music or for art or whatever that they get to do outside of that. And it's always a struggle to fit that stuff in because that stuff doesn't make money for you. We're all in the fortunate position, and a lot of people in this time are in the fortunate position of being able to take those two things, those two parts of your life, and like weave them together. And it's a weird balance of how much of the two of them get to be in any given thing that you create. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's out front. It's out in front of people, and they see that weaving that we're constantly doing between the, I had this idea and I want to make this thing and I want to be myself and I want to, but I'm also using those things to pay for my life. And so like how much of the two of those things are mixed together in any given creation that I make?
We call it a lifestyle channel.
I think we tend to, people that we watch for entertainment or listen to for entertainment, or you know, whether it's music, a play, anything that's in the creative thing, when you follow somebody because you like them, you expect more of the same. You have this expectation of them and you hold them to this thing. And when you expand beyond that expectation, it causes a lot of, there can be some negativity in there. And
yeah, when you step outside what people expect of you.
Yeah. And imagine if the Beatles just made I Want to Hold Your Hand for, you know, 8-10 albums, but they changed it up every time. The money coming in allows me to expand and grow, and it's still mind-blowing to me with all my self-doubt that I have that companies believe in me enough to pay me a stupid amount of money at times to talk about their product, and I get to create something that didn't exist before. That blows my mind that somebody believes in me enough to do that.
You're one of the lucky ones.
Yeah, I agree.
Extremely.
Yeah. We all are.
And I think the kind of, I mean, obviously you're not complaining about this because you got paid or you are getting paid to make a thing that you weren't expecting to make. So you're like, I don't think you're complaining about the opportunity to do that, but it was a stress on you trying to fit in the time and fitting the creation. And I would imagine that probably led to like, is this worthwhile? Am I giving up? Am I creating stress for myself based on the money? Is that a worthwhile trade? Right. And I think, you know, even if there's not a time constraint to that, just the matter of getting paid for something and then having to kind of reconcile, is the pay that you're getting worth the effort that you're having to put in or the trade-off that you're having to make for your creative whatever. And I think people run into that no matter what the situation is. I mean, think of working overtime. Is the work, you know, you work at Kmart, and is the trade-off of spending your evenings making time and a half, is that worth giving up that several hours to do the thing that you love to do? That is a trade-off for money. And it's a very similar trade-off to, I'm going to change my piece of art a little bit because some company wants to pay me twice as much money as I was going to make in the first place. Like, that seems like a pretty reasonable trade-off. You know, as long as there's, like, ethical stuff in place and everything. I'm not talking about doing anything for money, but you got to figure out, I think it's perfectly okay for anybody to look at the trade-off between the money and the thing that they're giving up, whether that's time, creative control, whatever, and decide where that line is for you on any given day. Because sometimes you may need to really pay a bill. You know what I mean? And sometimes you may not need to pay a bill. And I get to do this often where I get to say, I don't want to work with that company that, like, sneakily pays off your debt for you because that seems really sketchy. Whatever that is not worth the ethical risk for me to take that on as a sponsor just so I can get a paycheck. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to work with DraftKings. I'm not going to. There's a lot of things that I constantly say, no.
Just get ready.
That's fine. I'm not judging anybody on that, but like.
Ben Pixels asked me, like, would you work with DraftKings? It's like, but yes.
I mean, for the I've set some guidelines down for myself because where I think that line is, and I think everybody has to do that. But my point in saying all that is that sometimes that line will probably shift a little bit, depending on where you are in life.
Yeah.
Depending on what you need.
Remember when all the gaming companies were going around? They were like drug dealers. Like, tanks. I don't know if you guys
Tanks or whatever. Yeah.
Like warplanes and all that. Those guys are like drug dealers. They're like, hey, you want to do a commercial? It's 15 grand. All you got to do is talk about it. I mean, like, all right, I never touched a video game in my life. I'll do it.
You brought up the example that I relate to so much, and that is working overtime at Kmart. I worked at Kmart for so long that I was one of the rare people that got weekends off. I worked at Kmart for 8 years. And the last few years, Saturdays and Sundays off. But anytime they're like, hey, can you come in on Saturday to cover? I was like, I will gladly give up my time because I need more money because Christmas is coming up because, you know, I got a flat tire and I need to do a car repair. I relate to that so much. And the anxiety that you just gave me now, just thinking about that is real. But I always took the overtime. I always did because at that time it was always worth it.
And honestly, that same thing still happens, I think, in our industry. Mm-hmm. I know that the ads that we do are going to pay more if they are in November and December than they would if they were in January, February. And so I'm going to be more apt to take on ads that maybe I wouldn't or take on more ads than normal in those first 2 months to prepare for the next 2 months where stuff's going to be lower. Same thing for midsummer. You know, I mean, there are reasons. There are weekends like that. There are holidays coming up that we have to pay for. And the stuff that we do, and musicians are the same way. I think a lot of creatives are the same way where they see this kind of seasonal, like, feast famine kind of thing, and they have to make decisions based on that. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that as long as your integrity is in place and you've decided ahead of, I do think it's important to decide ahead of time where your lines are, what you're willing to represent, what you're willing to give up in your own creative control for things. I think it's good to think about that out of the moment, because if you don't have that plan, that decision made ahead of time, when some company shows up like a drug dealer with, here's a really good deal for you, you're like, well, yeah, that sounds like a really good deal. I've never really thought about whether I want to, you know, whatever. If you don't have those kind of character guidelines set up ahead of time for yourself, I think it can be hard and it can be really easy to make a misstep there.
Yeah.
But, and I know, like, for me, I have done, and the reason I asked you this earlier, I have done several videos that would not have happened if the sponsor had not shown up and said, hey, we want to pay you, like, a crazy amount of money. For example, HP, the computer company, said, we want you to talk about our support system, like, the supporting our computers. Okay, well, I'm a Mac user, for one, so I never would have thought about that as an option, but it turned out that the whole thing was around they just want to tell people that they have a support website to support people who own their computers. Like, that's pretty awesome. There's nothing unethical about that. It's not something I would have naturally done, but okay, it's a good thing, right? So then I'm trying to figure out, they're like, we're going to send you a computer so you can do the ad. What do I do with a HP computer? I'm a Mac user. I don't, you know. And so there's several layers there of, I would not have done this otherwise. But, like you said, that was an opportunity for me to go, what do I do with a bunch of stuff that I wouldn't normally have to do anything with? And I was able to come up with the idea of using it generally as a console,
to computer. To go to Amazon.
I used it for Home Assistant, which was a thing I'd been kind of wanting to play with, but didn't really have a good reason to, and I didn't have the time to, like, experiment with it. And then I could wrap the whole thing in sci-fi stuff and make it look like the things that, you know, like that console. And so that whole thing ended up being really cool, and I loved how it came out. But there is no reason that I would have done any of that stuff had they not shown up and said, we want to give you money.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. Like, it's hard for me to say, you know, that it's always the right thing to be like this virtuous artist who only thinks about your art first and never wants to take the rest of the stuff. I think that's a great sentiment, but I don't know that it's impractical. That's a very good way to
put it. Yeah. I did a commercial for what is the Microsoft version of the iPad? What is that called?
A Surface.
Surface. Yeah, I auditioned for the Surface. My agent's like, do you use a Surface? I said, I do now. Why? What's up?
What's a Surface? Yes.
He goes, you use, what is it, Intel or Microsoft Surface? I go, I do now. Why? What's going on? He goes, well, we got an audition for you. I was like, cool, send it my way. Let's do it. And I had a Zoom call with somebody that was like a marketing person for Surface. And I just pretended like I knew everything about it. I just Googled some of their previous ads, and it shows like these artists, I use my Surface, blah, 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 you know, but they were always more of a lifestyle, and it just showed them working with it very vaguely versus what they do for a living. And I didn't get the ad. Maybe they saw through my BS.
Many years ago, this is probably a good 8 years ago, got a deal with DeWalt, and they basically dropped off a pallet of tools, table saw, circular saw. And in the ad read, I called the reciprocating saw a sawzall, right? Mm. That's a common term. And it got past all approvals. Video went live. Somebody from DeWalt said that is not what that tool is called. That is a Milwaukee term. Mm. We have to take this video down and re-upload it. Yeah.
Oh, sawzall is a Milwaukee's brand?
Yeah.
What is it called? The reciprocating saw? What is the base?
I think
the boring name.
Yeah. I was like, oops.
Yeah. They should have warned you that.
Well,
it should say on their branding, this is not a sawzall, to be perfectly honest.
Right.
Well, I think in general there should be some sort of a struggle between figuring out like what your line is for taking money and doing work for money and stuff. But I think it's really easy for people outside of any situation to vilify, that's the word I was looking for. Vilify somebody for taking money for work. But I think that's what your job is. And being on display can make it look different than it actually is. I think it's something that far more people are dealing with. It just doesn't look the same when it's not out front. So I don't think it's a big deal, but I do think that I want to point out that I think, for me at least, that character-driven kind of, I've set my guidelines for what I'm willing to give up for money in life is a really good place to just kind of put a stick in the ground.
What's the difference between if a well-known gallery reaches out to a sculptor and says, we would like to have a showing 8 months from now, and then that sculptor has to make a bunch of pieces for the show that is going to sell? He's doing it for the money. He's doing it for the money. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's also exposure.
I guess there's something. So an example would be, and I saw this recently, and I can't remember who the artist was. In the 80s, there was somebody who made a song about Budweiser, I think. Dang it, I can't remember who this was. Somebody can yell at me and say who it is. But imagine you're a famous rock musician, and a beer company comes to you and says, hey, can you write a song? Not like, can Budweiser sponsor your album or Budweiser sponsor your tour? Can we pay you a crazy amount of money
to implant
to write a song about Budweiser and put it on your album? That's a different thing. Like that, I don't know. I mean, being associated with something and I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's writing a jingle essentially, but as an artist, like there is a different thing there between I'm doing work for hire for the output is for the company or the output is for me and it is enabled by the company. Like I think those are two different things, not mm-hmm. necessarily bad things, but whenever I saw that recently, like I'm like, oh yeah, the '80s were like that. You know, there were a lot of like the few companies were doing a lot of things. There were a lot of Coke inspired, you know, like pop music things happening and stuff like that. So,
well, Michael Jackson redid his lyrics for, I think, a Pepsi commercial.
That's right. That's what I was thinking. I'm not Coke. Yeah. Yeah. You're right.
I remember in the '90s, a commercial came on, I believe it was for a car company, and a Lenny Kravitz song was playing. I believe it was Are You Gonna Go My Way? And my roommate and I had this heated conversation of like, oh yeah, Lenny Kravitz just sold out. And he was like, no, he's getting paid to make his art. And I have a different approach to that these days, but back then I was like, that's a complete sellout. And I will. Now I sell. You want to hear something?
What's very funny is I always liked Lenny Kravitz. I liked how he was able to pull in all these different influences and mutate it to what I always thought was a good sound. But I was with a friend from this who grew up and was like sort of a, I don't want to say a flower child, but he's much older than me. But he was from the '60s generation, put it to you that way. Old friend of mine, Jeff, and we were sitting, and Are You Gonna Come My Way came on the radio when it was just released. This is when the radios would play in the background, right? And you'd hear random songs. And so that came on, and he's like, what is this? I go, oh, this is Lenny Kravitz. He's a very talented musician. He goes, and he's listening, and he goes, I feel very bad for this gentleman. I'm like, why? He goes, he doesn't have an original thought. He goes, this is really horrible. And I'm like, well, this is good. He goes, it's inspired by. He goes, No. He doesn't have an original thought. He just, that was the end of it. I was like,
oh, wow.
And that's the difference with somebody from that, you know, now he's like in his 70s versus, yeah. You know, whenever that song came out 25, 30 years ago.
Oh,
we
yeah.
We were sitting in my shop time. And that song came on the radio and he was just immediately struck. He's like, what is this? I'm like, you like it? It's Lenny Kravitz. He's like, no, I feel very bad for this gentleman.
Wow. We're just so opinionated about yeah. art and anything that's yeah. that's creative. It's made to cause an opinion, and that's there's a better way of saying that, but that's just the life we've chosen. Anything yeah. you create is meant to be looked at and judged.
That's a whole conversation right there that we're not going to have today because it's time to thank our Patreon supporters.
I drank too much coffee. I'll be right back.
Big thanks to everybody at Patreon for supporting the show, for making it possible for us to talk about art and money and stuff. We are very grateful for the support. Big thanks to Crabtree Creative, Michael Menegin, Warren Works, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, Scott at Daddy Yourself DIY, Sean Beckner, Odin Leather Goods, Rich at Low End Design, Chad's Custom Creations, Chad from Mancrafting, Works by Solo, Albert's Woodworks, and Corey Ward. They're our top supporters, but then there's a whole bunch of other people who are awesome that help us out on all different levels. People like Alex Vitale.
Thank you, Alex.
Yeah, there's lots of people.
I think Bob always picks the person with the most complicated last name.
Yeah, maybe. No, there are definitely more complicated ones. Let me see if I can find something more complicated than that.
Yeah.
Shane Dzik. I'm not even going to try this one. Dzikek. Shane, I do not know how to say that.
Dzik?
Zikik?
Zikik? Zikik.
Yeah, you probably got it. Anyway, big thanks to Shane and Tori and Gregory and Richard and Ariel. There's a lot of people. So
you got to hold up a mirror and say, tell everybody who you see through the mirror. That's romper room for when I was a kid. Teacher would hold up a mirror and go, I see Billy and Bobby and Jimmy and Kathy.
Oh, over your shoulder. Yeah. Well, big thanks to everybody that helps us out. We are grateful. And you all get the after show, no matter how much you support at. So you can go to Patreon, download the link, put it in your podcast player, and you get the after show, which is going to happen right after this show. And if you want to get that, if you want to help the show out, we would appreciate it very much. You can go to patreon.com/makingit and help us out. I also forget constantly to mention the fact that this show is in video on YouTube as well. Aww. So if and the after show is in video.
That's why we all have to have our makeup artists available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you want to watch video and watch what we're talking about and see my messy office and stuff like that, you can. You can go to the Making It YouTube channel and watch the show there.
We're such visual people. We're always like, look at this thing that we're working on, and we're holding it up to the camera, and 5% watch the video.
And people are on the treadmill going, I don't know what it is. I can't. Sorry about that. You guys got anything to recommend this week?
I got a great video that popped up last night. I watched it all the way through to the very end. Did you guys see this video about GoPro pop up?
Nope.
It was about the legacy or the rise and fall of GoPro.
Yeah, basically. I didn't watch that myself.
It's a great video, and I felt maybe nostalgic for GoPro. I still want to use GoPro. I just don't trust that a day of shooting is not going to get fried in the machine once at the end of the day. I mean, am I the only one? I ask a lot of people, and very few people have that problem. You shoot for hours, and then all of a sudden you get an SD file error, and then you get a picture of a Band-Aid. That's never happened in any other brand. I will no longer go near a GoPro because I'm not going to risk shooting all day long and then get a file with a picture of a Band-Aid. I'm like, why? Why did the graphics team put a picture of a Band-Aid in there? why is that even a possibility of using this tool? Because the files are gone. It's this SD error with a picture of a Band-Aid. It should just say your files are FUKD, and that's it.
I can't remember what happened.
It should be a picture of this.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you're recommending a video? Is that where we're at?
No, it's about the rise and fall of GoPro. And it's interesting from a huge bit. What to me was so cool is the impetus of how he came up with the idea. I still love GoPro. I just hate the fact that it chews up your file. Did that ever happen to either one of you?
I can't remember. Something happened in the past year. I'm like, I'm never buying another GoPro. And I can't remember exactly what that was. And maybe it was delay. Bad
trying
files.
To turn it on is always a delay. When you try and turn it on, it takes like what feels like 3 seconds to turn on, which is so annoying. And I've had about 5 SD card errors in my life with that. And then I lost whatever I shot for the previous few hours. It's gone forever. And then I keep the SD cards around hoping that someday there'll be a magical solution. Look, there's one stuck on my table right here. I'm going to go back to that video from 4 years ago and finish it.
I have not owned a GoPro in a very long time, so I haven't had that issue. But.
And then also, I'm going to name drop only because we're texting right now. I don't mean to drop names, but I'm texting with Devin Stone from Legal Eagle. You know him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I made the big gavel for Devin years ago, and he's going to be in the area. He's like, hey, I'm going to be around. Can I come pick up the gavel? I said, absolutely. So he's going to swing by on Saturday. He's from D.C.
He's got a huge channel. He does the, like, a lawyer...
Lawyer stuff.
Well, what's it... He'll evaluate a movie and talk about... I forget what the series is called, but, like, lawyer reacts to lawyer in movie.
Oh. Right. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So you have to send me the link to the GoPro video because I searched Rise and Fall of GoPro, there's a lot of videos about it. So, I don't know which one you're talking about.
I sent it out last night. I sent it to my brother.
Cool. What you got, David?
New to me called Flatlander Tech. Bob, have you ever heard of this guy?
I don't think so.
He is a DaVinci Resolve user, and he didn't like the control module on that. I don't know anything about DaVinci, but he didn't like the control module, the way it was set up, and the other modules that he would use to edit video with. So he gutted it and made a new one. And this is the thing that I'm really into, is like taking electronics and then recasing them. And he did this, but he combined other ones. And it's not in an artful way like I try to do. It's in a very practical, I made this thing better way. It's a really good video. And it's just about problem solving and customizing and making cool stuff.
Cool. Yeah, I like that. Right on. Well, mine is actually an Instagram channel that only has a couple of posts. And it's somebody that I randomly... So have you seen this thing, this like thing that happens on Instagram a lot where people are artists and they post, I'm going to post my art every day until somebody sees this, or until I sell this, or until... Have you seen this thing?
No.
I've seen this a bunch of times. Maybe it's just me. But it's basically artists who are trying to get attention for their art, so they just post something every day until a company sees it, or until somebody buys something, or until they sell a certain amount or whatever. And so I got one of these, and it is the thing's called Sparkstack Studios, and he only has 7 posts, 21,000 followers. His name is Will Dale, but he makes cars, like wall art of cars, out of stacked pieces of, I assume it's acrylic, and it's painted on the back. But it's ridiculous. Ooh. And so the one of I saw is, let's see, when it's the Porsche, I guess, the red Porsche. And it shows it putting it together from the back. So he laser cuts all these pieces, I assume they're laser cut, and puts them together in a stack with offsets. And then when he flips it around, you have like a car. Hmm. And I don't know, it just caught me as like, this is amazing. Like, what a ridiculous amount of work to end up with a really cool piece of art that would go on the wall of a car. And then as you start to look at it from the side, you see all the layers and everything, and it's just really complex.
Huh.
I don't know. He doesn't have a big following. I think it's cool art, so I figured I would talk about it. So
the way you described that, the way you described that sounded like, I don't know if you've ever seen the pancake art people do, where they have the pancake batter in a squirt bottle, and they'll do a little thing in the pan that gets a certain color, and then they go over top of that with another layer that gets a certain color, and then they keep doing that, and then when you flip it over, it reveals the pancake art. I don't know.
Yeah, I have seen that. That's a whole nother kind of crazy.
I love crazy.
Yeah. Anyway, so he's got some really cool stuff. I think it's a neat thing that I wouldn't even know where to start with to be able to layer a design like this. So I think it's cool. Go check him out. You guys got anything else? Jimmy's texting with his famous internet friend. So
we didn't do an emergency podcast this week, so I guess there's not any news to report on.
No.
Right. No.
Let's talk no about news. It.
Okay.
We'll I'm buying about. Something fun and expensive. I'll tell you guys about it.
Oh.
You could say that every week.
That is the truth. All right, cool. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
We'll catch you next time.
Bye. Love you.
Love you.